Hello and welcome to ANK's Wheel of Time book review, where we're working our way through the Wheel of Time books. And today I will be reviewing book one, chapter 12, Across the Taran. So a few things do happen in this chapter. We do have a few points to talk about, some actually quite amusing. There are some eye-rolling moments. We start off with the group just having left the ferryman's house on their way out to the to the ferry landing, or the wharf or whatever, and it's a dark. I'm having this image in my head of it was a dark and clammy night, kind of thing. That's essentially how it gets described. You know, it's foggy, can't really see much. Everyone's, talking in very hushed tones. There's only a slight whisper between Len and Moraine.
Yeah, well, they don't want to be overheard because they can't. They don't know who's out there.
True, but there's the comment that got made I found interesting. It being that he'll remember too much because of me, or something.
If she does it.
Yeah.
The more magic she uses, the more tired she will get, and she wants to try and save it.
Well, it's not that.
Obscuring her view, making it so that it's a little harder for him to remember her by not interacting with him as much will be better.
I'm thinking that it's got to do with something that Rand doesn't know, because we've already had hints, some not so subtle, already in this book, that there's more to Rand than anyone knows at this point. And
it's definitely more to her as well.
Agreed.
But I would imagine that would also have something to do with just a simple, pure fact of, it's a lot harder for her to obscure her own face, maybe, rather than, say, someone else's. Maybe her magic doesn't work as effectively when face to face with them. I don't know, but it could be the possibility.
Mm. I'm sure that's something that we'll find out in upcoming chapters. And
so, okay, I don't know if you remember this, although it depends on personal readers. But there were some books that I've read where the magic wasn't used as effectively if the person knew them or if the person looked directly at them.
Oh, in terms of like cloaking and whatnot?
In terms of cloaking or disguising themselves, things like that. So if you knew the person very well, or if you knew the magic had been done, like the disguise magic had been done, or if you were strong-willed, it wasn't as effective. So, the more I guess self-confident you were, the more strong-willed you were, the less effective magic was on you. So it could have things to do with that as well. I mean, we don't know. We don't know. Maybe she felt that he had a strong will, and so as a result said that he would remember more if she did it.
Mm.
And the less that they remember her face, the better. She is an Aes Sedai after all, so he might recognize who and what she is, and as a result of remembering that, may be more inclined to be a little more cheeky.
Possibly, but
a little more devious.
I'm thinking, my personal thing, I'm thinking it's got to do with Rand's past.
What past?
Exactly.
He doesn't have much of one. He's been a baby.
Yeah, but we don't know his full history.
Okay, as far as we know, he was adopted.
Yes.
But we don't know who his parentage is. He was a baby and remembers nothing except his parents as he knows them. So there ain't much of his past that...
Well, fair point, but I'll rephrase.
He's been on a farm for the majority of his life, so it's not so much his past, it's more his people's and his culture and his parents' past.
Exactly.
His bloodline.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of what I'm thinking, that and Moraine doesn't want that information quite getting out quite yet. It would be the wrong time for that to happen.
Then why not take the other two?
They are his friends.
Yeah, but that's no reason.
But there was more. But there was more to it than that. You are right.
I don't think she knows. I think she definitely knows.
Or strongly suspects.
What one of them is. She strongly suspects Rand, possibly. But there could be something with the other two that they may be of a similar lineage.
Maybe.
Just distant past. And so all three of them have the potential to be the one. But it's more a case of which one is got the stronger bloodline.
Yeah.
It could just be that too.
Anyway, so after that, we get to the ferry landing or whatever. And everyone kind of dismounts from their horses. And I love what happens next. Everyone trying... just as the ferryman with his crew is turning up, everyone, I'm just like, I'm picturing this, Photoshop moment where you go, strike a pose.
Well, the flinging of the cloak over so the axe was revealed, and then, he kind of did the same with his sword, flinging his cloak to the side, so his sword was revealed.
He was trying to copy a land thing, but he couldn't copy the slouch too much.
It wasn't so much that. It was more a case of, okay, why are we showing our weapons? But okay. And then it was like, oh, this is, okay, I get why we're showing our weapons. So what kind of a pose am I going to do, The whole, he wasn't going to do the nonchalant... shrug casual way, because he would just be laughed at with that. I thought that was funny, in the stance of the getting ready.
Yeah.
I would have so laughed.
It's not getting ready, but it's more of a case of don't mess with us. We're a big group of people with weapons. Don't mess with us.
If they only knew, they didn't know how to use them. Half the party didn't know how to use those. Although I do like the twirl of the dagger. Knife.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then starting to pick at his or trim his nails. Well, that was
typical kind of roguish type, type image. And so the ferryman comes along. From
a gleeman, nonetheless.
True. So the ferryman comes along, initially is asking, you said that there'd be more gold, and Lan says he'll get it on the other side of the river. So, and
that his, the gold that was already given was already hidden.
Yep.
Yeah.
So the ferryman orders everyone to board the boat. So they do.
He didn't look none too happy about it either.
No, he wasn't.
Because he was hoping to just get the gold without having to
ferry them across. Ring and run kind of thing or something. Yeah. But yeah. So they board the boat and start going across the river. Still dark and everyone's talking very hushed tones again. Rand is kind of roaming the ship a little bit. And
get a little bit of a history about the river and how its claimed lies, and strong swimmers can't even swim across it and stuff. Hence the need for the ferry, and that it was wide and stuff like that.
You do have an interesting conversation between Ran and Lan at this point as well, while they're on the boat, because you've got Rand who's initially thinking, do you really think the ferryman, talking to Lan. Do you really think the ferryman would have robbed us? Lan quite correctly raised the point that, in the dark, strangers will do things to other strangers that they would not do otherwise.
Mm. Would not normally think to do otherwise under different circumstances.
And it's true. I don't think, we like to think that that the darkness, and mind you, I'm speaking generally in life, the darkness, kind of covers us from... for others from seeing or knowing about what we're doing. And in some cases...
Speak for yourself, I don't care if they know. I'm not that bad.
Hey, depends what you're talking about.
But you know what I mean. I do get what you mean, that a lot more crimes occur during evening hours. Or
cheeky activities.
During evening hours, because the darkness gives you a sense of coverage.
Yeah.
That you're safer, and I suppose the additional added on fog would do that. But still, it's What I find funny about this particular moment is, you know, he's saying where he turns around and he says, you know, I thought that with all of the talk that I heard, that you would have assumed that they would be doing something like this because you guys don't have a high opinion of these people.
And there's another point that I want to cover with this too, that people do.
He turned around, but he also then he turned around and said, well, you know, that's the last time I assume anything about anyone outside my own village, you know, outside the village, you know, that kind of a thing.
Because
that kind of a comment that he makes,
And it's a whole "don't judge a book by its cover"
kind of thing.
Because everyone read the cover of the book, but they've never actually read the book itself. Yeah. In this case, experienced the people of Taran Ferry to know whether the stories are actually true. And that's another thing that that happens a lot in life is that we're told a lot about different people that we might associate with, and we build up this opinion of them, and then when we actually do meet these people, we've got these prejudices and beliefs about them which may be so far off the mark it's not funny.
And he's only getting a glimpse of this town. Like, he's met ferrymen, that's it.
Say seven people out of a town of, I don't know, let's call it 50. I mean, I'm not expecting it to be huge, but...
Oh, maybe more than that.
No, but I'm just saying that it's... I'm not expecting it to be a huge, it's a huge
small
town.
It's a small portion in comparison to the rest of it.
Yes,
and
he's seeing it
in the dead of night, where this is the possibilities of such activity and such thoughts are highly increased.
So anyway, they make it to the to the other side of the river, everyone disembarks. And I find what happens here. I mean,
Expected, wasn't it?
Well, kind of. I mean, in our last recording, which granted was a while ago, so I can't quite remember what all of our predictions were, and we do apologize for the delay in this, but I'll take the fault on that one. Because we were kind of predicting that there would be a number of different outcomes, being would they kill them on the other side, would they let them go so they could go back, would they strand them?
Them was that the boat would be sunk.
So we did. It looks like
destroyed in some way.
With our predictions, it looks like we did. We were right with one of them.
Yeah. Well, we didn't think of a whirlpool.
Not quite. No, that was actually a pretty cool touch, Moraine.
We were thinking that it would accidentally catch fire, or that it would accidentally be, you know, unmoored and then just drift off
somewhere
into the ether of the darkness, where we would later on be able to retrieve it.
So as a little thing, everyone was kind of, the party left, kind of got off the boat, and then you had Len and Moraine kind of lure the ferryman and his crew off with, come here to get the gold.
Gold, yep.
And there's an extra silver for each of you for the, getting us across so fast or something, so that everyone would be...
the boat.
Because they didn't want to hurt anyone.
No. But they lured them off with the gold, and while she was paying... No, while he was paying them, she unlatched the raft.
And created the whirlpool.
Created a whirlpool to sink it.
And, the crew, the ferryman and his crew tried to go after the boat, but, in the end...
After they saw that whirlpool, they all went a-running.
Yeah, it was like, yeah, we've lost it. And so they're having to find another way back. But the ferryman did, Hightower, did get, essentially ran off with, the little bag of Rand's gold of Land's gold that he had. So he was, compensated for the loss of the boat.
Yes.
Now,
I think he would have preferred to keep his boat.
Oh, I agree. Teach a man to fish, as opposed to giving a man a fish kind of mindset.
Mm.
Because, the gold would only last so long, whereas having the ferry to go back and forth would provide an endless, potentially endless...
Income.
But anyway, so ferryman crew gone. We're now back with the main party, and you've got... Moraine, who's making a comment that I've cloaked the river, for quite a way, and the Drakkar is going to be kind of...
Searching the river.
Searching the river, but he can't see us, and so he's going to report to the med roll, that he's been unable to find us, and because of the fog, they're not going to be sure which direction we've gone.
But they'll assume the river because it's been cloaked, the fog. The explanation, she gives that explanation, and she seems to be getting tired now. I think mostly mentally rather than physically, although I'm sure physically...
A little bit of both, I would imagine.
Yeah, I'm sure physically would
have... I'm trying to do some of the stuff she's done. It's got to be draining.
Which is why I was saying it's more of a mental capacity. So to sit there and explain to them all her reasonings behind doing what she's doing, I can understand her impatience. About, you know, why didn't
she... Let me do my thing, let me alone. You should be able to figure this out for yourselves. It's not too complicated.
Yeah. Why not cloak us all the way to where we need to go? Well, that would be obvious because they could quite clearly understand, well, the fog is going that way. That's the way they're going.
Not only that, but, you know, just to put this into D&D terms again, which I love to use, I've only got 10 money. You're asking me to use 15. Give me a break.
Yeah.
Let me recharge some a little, please.
You've not used a D&D reference in this one.
Yes, I have. Surely.
No.
How can I not have used D&D in a Wheel of Time podcast?
You've not. You've used several other different things, but not D&D.
I question that, but anyway.
You've used Star Trek references. You're going through a Star Trek phase.
Which will no doubt make a reappearance at some point, I'm sure.
I think we've quoted Big Bang once in a while.
Hmm.
And stuff, but anyway.
Anyway, so... they move along down the river a little bit and find a small clearing or cave.
They go to the campsite that they previously set up, which I find a bit interesting. It goes towards, you know, his preparations and stuff. So he's definitely a person who plans ahead.
This being land, you mean?
Yeah, land. Because his firewood hadn't been disturbed. No one had been there. So he knew that no one had been there because the firewood that he'd stacked up hadn't been disturbed or anything. But I found it interesting that he'd made the plan and preparation to potentially use it as a campsite.
Mm. Which I find interesting because he seems to have known that they were going to be coming back this way.
Yes.
As well. So I'm wondering... I've got a little bit of, I don't know, whether or not there was any kind of foresight or if it was a case of, well,
this is all... It's logical that we'd go back to the Aes Sedai country and this is the way back to it.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Yeah.
So they taking the chance to kind of rest and recuperate. And
light the fire.
Now we get to a roll your eyes type moment.
Well... I also find that because she, Egwene laughed at their stances, right? Because she thought it was comical.
She's got to be the life of the party here, the one who's, and certainly the naive person in terms of the life that she, that's apparently in for her. And feel free to laugh at some of our predictions that are going to happen here, because it wouldn't have surprised me if Egwene ends up becoming this powerful Aes Sedai, kind of taking over the kingdom maybe, and... whatnot, and you know, kind of found in the sticks or whatever, you kind of unknown Aes Sedai royalty, maybe.
I don't know about that.
But maybe I'm overstating it.
I know that there's no doubt that she'll definitely become some sort of a powerful, you know, magical force use. But I think that there's definitely got to be some sort of a realism slap that's got to come.
I agree.
For her
to be... And that's why I'm... and that's why I'm saying that that while she may have all this kind of in store for her as her destiny, there's got to be some point where she realizes, oh crap, this is what I've actually got myself into.
There's a point where the adventure is no longer of a fun nature.
Mm.
It's not a burden so much, but more of a realization that it's not an easy thing to do.
Lord of the Rings reference. Wanted. That I'm going to bring in here.
Well, we've done that a lot. So.
I know. But, and this is more just a food for thought kind of thing, is that you have, you actually see that moment hit with Frodo. When you're watching Lord of the Rings, it's been a long time since I've actually read the book, so I couldn't really speak for the book side of it. But in the movie, there comes a point where he realizes that he may not come back from this, and that it's not the fun adventure that that he was expecting it to be, and that this is being a lot more grueling for him. He pushes through it, don't get me wrong.
No. That whole it's not fun thing definitely hit him after the nurse call knifed him, right?
Yes.
And he finally gets to a safe haven. He thinks, oh, great, I can leave the ring here. And then they all have that fight at the council, and then he takes it on. He realizes that he can't leave it to anyone else.
Mm.
That's the moment where he realizes that this is not going to be fun.
Yes.
But I think there is another part where it sinks even in further into him that there is no return journey.
Yes.
Type thing.
Yeah.
So there's two points to that. There's one where he's thinking, okay, I can't give the responsibility to anyone else. I have to do this. But then there's another moment where, okay, this is a one-way journey. It's not a return trip type thing. He kind of holds out to hope for a little longer with that part.
Yeah. And you see with and each of the characters in their own way goes through their own growth. And I think that Egwene.
Seriously, needs to have one of those moments.
Well, yeah, but not only that, but it's going to be interesting to see what those moments are like for her. If they're going to be small, subtle things, oh, I didn't like that, but it could but this is still going to be okay. It's still pretty cool that I'm able to do this. Or is it going to get to the point where I had to watch one of my friends die before I realize
this is not fun anymore?
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be interesting if it's going to be a subtle kind of little thing that slowly drag her down, or if somehow she's going to be able to keep her light naivete regardless of what happens. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
Well, it might just be her personality too, to be bubbly and always look on the bright side.
Which is a good personality trait to have, but it really makes you come along as an airhead some of the time.
Yeah, it is. And you need those types of people in books.
Yes.
Like Merry and Pippin were very much like that, that they still experienced quite a lot. But they did have a naivete point to them. But they did also both have a turning point. They still enjoyed life, but they took it a lot more seriously too. After a certain part, I think their turning point for them was when they were by themselves finally.
When they were taken and separated. When they were by themselves or when they were separated? So you're talking when they go on?
No, there was two moments. One where they were by themselves with the tree, and they got where they get kidnapped and they get saved by the tree.
I am no tree. Yes, I am an ant.
Ant, that's it.
Yes. Sheesh.
No, jeez, I can't remember everything.
No, but you should remember that. Come on.
The talking tree.
Okay, tree bit would smack you right now.
Thank you, the tree bit. The one and only. Okay, so they have that sort of fun moment together, and then they get together with the other group. But that kind of helped them a bit too, with convincing to fight the war, and that battle sort of gave them... They were still fun and cheery, but that gave them a moment. And then when they got separated, the two of them got separated, and they were going in different directions.
And they had to face the world on their own apart for the first time.
That was their turning point.
Yes.
But they still kept some of their joy.
Oh, yeah. And it's just, again, because that's who they were. I mean, that's their personalities, which I've got to admit, despite all they had to go through, I'm impressed that they were able to keep. Because even after the Battle of Helm's Deep,
but they weren't there for
They weren't there
they
for
weren't
Helm's
there
Deep.
For that.
No, when did they come back?
They were off with Treebeard at that point.
That's right. So not the Battle of Helm's Deep, sorry, but the Battle of Isengard.
Yes.
Which, again, not a pleasant thing, but and they have seen some darkness
mostly,
in their own...
They mostly did that from on top of Treebeard.
I know,
so,
and
know.
seeing it... And kind of go at it was actually really,
really cool.
I love that bit of the movie.
Which is why I think that was sort of one of their moments. They were excited about the fact that they were going to war, and they saw all of this destruction and stuff. And while they were happy and cheery about it.
And they've also saw the Battle of Amon Hen where Boromir died. And so, they've seen their fair share of combat in their own way. But they're still
It was light in comparison to what Frodo and Sam saw, though, I think.
Oh, I fully agree with you on that one. But, you know, despite all this, they were still able to, at the end of the day, enjoy a pint. And
the hobbits.
And yeah, exactly.
You think maybe she's a hobbit?
After a fashion,
yeah.
At least by character.
Not so much with the eating.
Not by race, but certainly by character and by personality.
Yeah.
I would agree. That she's certainly got, you know, similar traits.
Mm.
As in terms of a love for life and a naivete to, you know,
the spirit of adventure.
Yeah.
Mm.
So, and she's initially thinking, you really think I can, because Egwene and Moraine
are
talking about this.
They get into the cave first and they set themselves up. And it's not until they're sitting down, the men are talking, and then Rand's overhearing the conversation between Moraine and her. And the discussion about, you know, her potential development in being able to control
the One Power.
The One Power.
Oh, which we get more of an explanation from here too, I might add.
Yes, about what it is.
Which I do like, and I'm just going to kind of look this up while we're talking about it a bit.
But what I find funny about this particular moment is that as she's instructing him, Rand gets upset by the fact that she is teaching her this. And I found that part particularly amusing because it was almost like he's just said, you know, I need to make a mental note not to judge and assume facts outside of my own village because I don't know them, kind of thing, and then sits there and gets all uppity and upset about the fact that Moraine is teaching her magic because it's Egwene.
Yeah.
And I found that kind of amusing because it's, you know, he's still, look,
protective of her to a point. He's still
protective of her to a point. But also it's a case of, well, you're not married to her, for one. For two, there's also the fact that the Aes Sedai, so far as you have been shown, has done nothing but good to you and to your village. And you're still using this prejudice that everyone has and warnings that he's been given about these Aes Sedai, and he's keeping them in mind. Don't get me wrong, like, you know, I get that his dad gave him warning about the Aes Sedai and stuff like that, but it's more a case of, you know, from his own personal experience, from what he's seen, she's not done anything too
harmful.
Harmful.
Hmm.
Yes.
And
so his being upset by it shouldn't really be anywhere near as what he's, you know, feeling.
Now, I do want to talk about you know, the breakup of the Aes Sedai of the One Power here. Which I do love that, or at least it gives us a clear understanding of why it's not so good for us guys to use it, and why it's become more of a feminine, you know, more of a feminine thing. Because at one point, it was safe for both sides to use.
Yes, and some, but somehow,
the dark. So we've got the two sides. You've got the side in, which is the female, which is the male half, and then you got the side R, which is the female half, and.
And what I find interesting is that there's a male and a female side to begin with in this whole magic. You would think that it would just be, there'd be one pool that they both draw power from, not a male and a female side of the pool. Isn't that interesting?
I do wonder how, you know, how the heck that works, though. I mean, how does this true source
become a male and female thing?
Yeah.
And know that there's a male using it and a female using it.
Yeah. I mean, because a little later on into this description, she describes the true source, you know, like a river, and like those who use it, as a water wheel.
Yes.
And
yet somehow the male side of it got tainted.
Yes.
With foulness.
by the Dark One. Thank you very much for making us guys suck. But, yeah. And so, Side M, which is...
So whenever someone is born with that power, they go a little nuts and they have to be put down before they...
Or whenever they try to use control.
Yeah.
Whenever they use it.
Which is obviously possibly where this whole dragon thing comes from, because this dragon dude could be someone who has the power, but
because... Have gone a little nuts, but been left to go unchecked.
Yeah, because he's had to use it to save people, possibly. So it's sort of like a self-prophecy type thing, you know.
Yep.
They use it to save people and then end up destroying people because they've used too much of it.
Maybe. So, yeah, I do like the description, but I need more. I need to know how they're this, because there's got to be some form of understanding or sentience or something by the true source to be able to know what type of person is using it.
Yeah. I mean, why can't the males then draw upon from the female side or the other river, as it were?
Yeah.
And what makes it, I don't know, makes it a female river?
I know. Whirlpool.
Or a male river.
Whirlpool.
A whirlpool. Doesn't that just make it so that one gets, that goes round and round?
Creates a hole.
Well, I don't know.
But that's going into things that are making this not quite so G-rated, so I'm going to move away from that kind of conversation. But anyway.
I don't know how that's not a G-rated thing. You're way over your own little head.
Anyway, moving on. Moraine decides to give Egwene a bit of a test and holds up a crystal.
Yes.
And I like the fact that she says that, you know, the true source isn't contained in any single object. So this or the little clay thing, wax thing that I was using before, it doesn't
works through it.
Yeah, but it's not contained in it. But it is a way to focus, to focus your energy.
Yes,
she says, just focus on, close your eyes and focus only on the crystal. And Rand sees it blinking, flashing a little bit.
Yeah.
And
so it would light up.
Yeah.
It can light up.
And Moraine...
To let it guide it.
And initially... Moraine is thinking, this isn't working. She sees it flashing, but it's not me.
And then she gets all excited about the fact that the last one she did all by herself.
Yep. And she realizes that, hey, I can do this. Yes. And she gets all excited about it, which I love. In her own kind of, I'm going to be an Aes Sedai. And it's like, Carly and I, feel free to, again, we look forward to being corrected on this particular point, but I'm thinking you are being excited about being signed up to Hell's Legion.
Yeah, well, she's being excited about being signed up to a highly...
Elitist
sort of... Well, maybe, but they've definitely got a strong prejudice against them.
Gandalf.
Not many people like them for some reason.
True.
At least not in that village.
Well, I'm thinking...
And they definitely hide the fact that they are Aes Sedai from other people as much as they can.
Because of their prejudice.
Because of the prejudice against them. So she's getting all excited about the fact that she's going to be this person that has to, have this stigma about her. I find that pretty interesting.
Mm.
But Rand is definitely not happy, and all she wants to do is share it with Faye. Did you hear that? I'm going to be an Aes Sedai. Okay. I am not liking the next conversation between her and Rand, although I've got the feeling that she could be a squeaky mouse when she wants to and pop them down.
Oh, yeah. Well, think about it. What would you do for your crush, really? Because he has...
I don't know. Look, I think, to be honest with you, if you truly did love someone, you would let them...
Support them.
You would support them in their endeavours in life,
I'm going to come back to that.
To a certain point.
Yeah, I'm going to come back to that conversation,
No person would want them to take drugs, and I suppose in this case he sees
let's
the
just
magic
say,
as a drug. But also, given the conversation, she was told that she can already access it, that it's going to happen to her whether she chooses it or not.
Yeah.
And it's much better for her to go through that, what you call it, a transition?
Something like that.
Or a transformation or something. It's much better for her to be guided through it and to have her guide her through it right now, rather than for her to experience it and potentially not survive it on her own.
Yeah. Although, so I got to admit,
whether or not he wants it to happen, it's going to happen. So to me, it's a pointless conversation he's about to have right now, which you can clearly see is going to happen.
I do. I'm right now picturing a one of the funnier kind of Big Bang episodes, being where Penny is thinking about quitting her job.
As an actress?
No, as a at the Cheesecake Factory.
At the Cheesecake Factory.
By the way, I will just preempt this, a little bit of spoiler if you haven't watched Big Bang. I'm sorry about what I've said already, but anyway, still, been out for a while. If you haven't watched it, you shouldn't, quite frankly. I feel sorry for you if you haven't. It's
pretty funny.
Yes. But the scene that I'm referring to is where she initially tells Leonard that I'm thinking about quitting my job, and Leonard, being the supportive boyfriend, is saying, I support you.
Yeah, to be an actress, to follow your career. To follow your career. That's right.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then,
I simply support you in that. Oh, I am so... And then
he's talking behind her back a little bit, saying, this is a mistake, you know, because she's got a steady source of income that she's got here, going into something which is highly unlikely to succeed or anything.
Yeah.
And she's taking a hell of a risk, but... and then when she calls up from the Cheesecake Factory, he immediately assumes that she's gone back to take her job back. He's like, oh, that's such a great idea. I'm glad that you've decided to go back to work. And she's like, Leonard, I'm just returning my uniform. And I support you.
This is so not that conversation.
No.
It can be hard. It can really be hard to support your partner in certain decisions, because you sit there and you think, oh my goodness, I so would not do that.
Yeah.
But you've also got to accept that they have their own life and they have their own goals.
And their own choices.
And their own choices.
Yeah.
And that's really hard. But with this one, it's
I think that this is going to be something that Rand is going to need to respect. He may initially resist the idea, but I think that when he sees that this is going to be, I think, going to be a growing point for both of them, and this is us going beyond the chapter now, obviously, making a few kind of
predictions
here. So, and we'll see in the long term how these actually play out, because these are not short term predictions.
No.
It's
definitely going to be a growing point for him to,
for both of them.
To accept his needing to allow her to be, I'm not so much an Aes Sedai, if that's what they want to call it, but I suppose that's what they call magicians here, Aes Sedai. Yeah. But she definitely needs to do this, because quite clearly it seems that she has that power, and whether she wants it or not, it's in her life. And she has to learn to manage it.
Yes.
And Rand's going to have to accept that. And I don't think he maybe might not accept that until...
Not right away. Not until he has a chance to see her in action.
Yeah, that's
using
right.
it the way that... using it the, should be the one power the way it's supposed to be used in a helpful kind of situation.
Yes.
And once he sees that kind of scenario play out, I think that his view of both Moraine and Egwene both... is going to change in, I would hope, a good way. I mean...
It depends on how it's used. I mean, like, if she's manipulated into using it for supposed good, but it does have a drawback type thing, he is going to resent...
That's what I'm saying. Helpful, good way. So, that's, you know, how it may play out. But there are other scenarios, you're right.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting to see how that happens. So the next chapter... is entitled Choices.
Oh, that's going to be so much fun.
That is quite an open title. In fact, if you want to pick open titles, you've just given us the Great Gates of Hogwarts.
I can definitely think of one that's definitely going to be a choice, and that's shove it up your butt, I'm going to be an Aes Sedai type conversation.
But I think that this, this chapter is going to have a lot. It's going to live up to its name, because at this point, everyone has managed to get this far. Now, the question is, where are we going to go from here? Continue on to Tar Valon?
I think that's still the goal.
I think that this kind of chapter, in terms of what it seems to, what my guess is what it's indicating, is possibly a little early in the piece. It may be about Egwene's choices in terms of, will she really go down this road and, having that kind of a discussion with Rand and the others and whatnot. It could also be about Rand's choices. Will he support her in this? Will he resent her? And what, what'll happen here? It could be about Lan's choices in terms of, are you crazy? Because he's already been a little wary about, this expedition to begin with. But there's a lot of different choices that could happen here, but I also think it's a little early because I don't think any major choices are going to be made for anyone until they actually get to Tar Valon. Because Tar Valon is going to be a place where, at least in my mind,
where supposedly Egwene could choose to stay and study.
Well, there's a lot of information that when they get to Tar Valon, there's going to be an information central, a big kind of exposition type, chapter. Because according apparently that's where we'll find out more about Rand's family history, and the reason why Rand, Matt, and because that's what's been said earlier.
Okay, well, it must have been something I've forgotten about.
Because Moraine said that we'll be able to find out more about.
I don't know much, but we'll find the information there. And I was okay, but you were there, so you clearly know something. Just don't want to tell him.
Yeah, or you don't want to say it until you've actually confirmed relevant info.
Either that, or she just wants to confirm which one of the three it is.
Hmm.
But yeah, it's definitely the place where the choices, as it were, is going to be.
Well, it's going to be, and
the major ones.
I'm picturing kind of Council of Elrond type.
Really? Yeah, okay. Well,
kind of, because it's at the Council of Elrond that that the Fellowship kind of got their main mission. This is what the next stage of your journey is going to be.
Okay, but not all of them were there at the start. They have kind of made. So you think maybe they're going to be picking up some people?
Possibly.
That there.
I mean, still don't know there is no ring in this, so we don't know what, we know.
Technically, the ring is Rand.
Well, we don't know that yet.
We don't know that yet, but who the dragon is basically the ring. It's the dangerous hoo-ha person that
can
send everyone mad.
Well, the thing that we don't know, see, with Lord of the Rings, you knew pretty much right from the get-go that the ring is, this, partially from the title, but also, because from some of the exposition that happens pretty early on in the book, that the ring is the going to be the focus in trying to destroy the ring or get the ring away and do stuff with the ring is going to be the main thing in the story. We are now 12 chapters into this, going on to 13, and we still don't. It's only been whispered by comparison.
Yeah, but the dragon seems to be the thing that everyone's looking out for and everyone's
just like it's Sauron, but there's not. Yeah, but then, again, that's big picture. We know big picture that's what the thing is. We don't know what the little picture is yet. Big picture.
We don't know who it is.
Big picture in Lord of the Rings was Sauron. Smaller picture was the ring. Big picture in this is the dragon. Smaller picture, we don't know.
Smaller picture is who is it?
No, because the dragon's already out there.
They say it is, but how do they know that that's not a person that...
A fake again,
yeah, because they've said that there's been several fakes and they've all died and gone away or disappeared.
Well, we'll find, to be continued and to be found out in later chapters. So, you can, as far as contacting us, you can contact us on at my email, which is warrior346@yahoo.com. On my Twitter feed, @warrior346. Or you can leave some feedback on the Apple Store as well, which we ask you just keep constructive. We do appreciate those who have stuck with us thus far, and we do apologise for the delay in between the last episode and this one. We'll try not to leave as big a time frame in between this one and the next one. Thank you all for listening, and may the wheel of time keep on spinning.